This is St. Pete X, affectionately known as SPX. SPX brings you St. Pete's brightest business people, civic leaders, and citizens who share their insight and expertise as well as their love of our great city. SPX is presented by the St. Petersburg Group. Head to stpete.co to check out more episodes, and by St. Pete's most effective marketing agency, Big C. Browse to bigc.co to see their work. Now enjoy the conversation.
If I had a gift, it's recruiting. And I've always, looking at resumes, made an effort to get their name right.
Yes.
And I worked at that. Yes. So I love ethnicities also.
Yes.
That's fun.
Well, as mentioned, my grandfather came from Ellis Island, and he had a longer name than Renesca, and I think it was countless syllables longer. And there was no way he was getting in without that name being truncated, but Polish, there's a Polish origin to that. What about Feaster?
Feaster is Swiss, German. Our ethnicity is that pretty much American from that standpoint. I'm third generation Florida. My dad was born in St. Pete. My grandfather in Micanopy. So we're just kind of an old Florida family.
We have the good fortune of David Feaster joining us today, the Florida Market President for Republic Bank. Thank you so much for joining us on SPX.
Ashley, I'm flattered to have been asked to come. So thank you for having me.
Well, your reputation precedes you in the sense that you are really revered as being, and you have been, highly involved in our community, not just in the work that you do, but civically and in the nonprofit space. You are a lifelong resident of St. Pete, I understand. And, you know, I'm always curious meeting natives of this city. We, you know, a large percentage of those that we interview is sort of witnessing our evolution and arguably our renaissance. Take me back to the beginning, as early as you want to go.
I was born at a very early age. How about that? As I was telling you, third generation. My father was the first cesarean section at Mound Park Hospital. And my dad was a doctor in town. And I grew up here, local public schools. Love the town. Something that makes you love a town more is leaving it for a short while. And I worked in other cities briefly. And it made me appreciate our community even more.
Where'd you go?
I worked in Miami for a while and learned true multiculturalism. A whole nother interview could be interviewing people on Brickell Avenue in Miami. What you see coming through there is fascinating. Eye-opening for a small-town boy from St. Petersburg. It really gave me a perspective, a true international perspective. Obviously Latin, but from all over the world passing through there. And I'd like to think it helped me as I progressed here. I've worked all over Tampa Bay, worked 3 years in downtown Tampa. I've run this region, but have been based in St. Petersburg. And I just love our town and love all of Tampa Bay for that matter.
How'd you get into the financial sector?
Coming out of college, got the classic management training program.
There you go.
Wasn't necessarily looking at banking. Had an opportunity. I was their very first management trainee in the bank. So good guy Norris Counts, who's from St. Petersburg, hired me as a trainee, and I literally filed checks, worked at a proof machine, was a teller, went to the customer service desk, which another word for that's the complaint desk. You can learn a lot working at the complaint desk. And just kind of got a good overview of banking and then worked my way up from there.
You talk about, you know, being the first management trainee, and I'm wondering how the values in sort of an up-and-comer have shifted over time. My assumption could be that, you know, now more than ever, specialization in banking in terms of, you know, individuals having a concrete acumen around wealth management or 401ks or specific derivatives of the financial sector, and maybe even more of an advisory function for someone who's coming up through the industry. How have you witnessed the acumen values shifting, and how have you maintained relevance in that?
I had a program where everything wasn't siloed. I was more holistic. Truly, when a check comes into a bank, how does it eventually get back to you? Those kind of things. I know that sounds mundane, but not siloed, not specialized. As I progressed in the industry, truly understanding how the whole process works, how a bank works, really helped me, particularly in conflict management, understanding how certain divisions and departments cannot get along at times, and understanding how the workflow and all that. So that was very valuable to me. But banking today is dramatically different. We used to literally look at every check over $1,000, hand look at it. Now no checks are looked at. None of that happens anymore. Obviously automated, and automated for the better. The industry is more profitable due to automation. The industry is better. The products and services are better. It's a very different industry, but you have to have that hands-on a little bit while also automating. My kids have no desire to go into a bank. They have none. I wonder the last time you walked into a bank. It's all online, and it's very easily done. You're depositing a check with your cell phone, and you can get every bit of information you want. You can move money, et cetera, digitally. So the industry is progressing, and there's more to come. So I'm excited about that, candidly.
Tell me how small banks are making money today.
There's many categories. We work on a basic margin, and that margin is what I'm paying you for your money. I say, that's my inventory, and then what I'm lending it for. So banks have worked historically on a 4% margin. So what we're paying for funds, and then what we lend them for. That's the traditional old-fashioned bank. Now, you have various forms of other fee income, various products and services that we get fee for. We also have transactions via debit cards, credit cards, all of those per click a bank gets fee income for. So those type of things are dramatically different than the more sophisticated treasury management. Treasury management is taking care of corporations' money, wires and movement of money and consolidating of funds. And there's something called remote deposit capture. We can have big companies. They have a little machine on their desk. They run the check through and it's read and then it's in your account like that. So that type of technology, we get a fee for that. But the convenience created for folks, particularly companies that have large checks, is immediately in their account. So you've got that fee base and traditional net interest margin.
There are, you know, some smaller banks that have, you know, their annual revenue is a couple $100,000 a year, but then you've got institutions like your own that have millions, hundreds of millions in assets. So where are we getting it right and where are our challenges?
Comparing you to CBS or ESPN, some of the small banks compared to Bank of America. There's a place for both of them. And I truly believe there's a place for both of them.
I was expecting flattery to come out of that comparison.
And yours is much better than ESPN and whatever. I have been CEO of two community banks, started one. And there's a place for it in the market. Particularly, people want to come in and I want to see the person in charge. That is very important to certain people. They want to look at the decision maker. And that was one of my slogans at my first bank that I started, Signature Bank. Our credo was deal with the decision maker. Particularly the small business person wants to deal with that. I want to know who's in charge. I don't want to be a number. That is the benefit of a small bank. Much like a small hardware store, like a small whatever kind of business. But we're limited being a small bank. Sometimes they would need more than we're allowed to lend. Sometimes they needed products we didn't have. They wanted a location in Atlanta and Kansas City. We can't do that. So you understood your market very well. And you had to have real targeted marketing because who was our market for a community bank? However, that community bank feel is one of the reasons I think I'm sitting here because it made me get involved in the community. It made me really be involved in the community doing that. I'm veering here. But community banks are necessary. I worked for Bank of America for a while. I've worked at a bank with no assets. So, I mean, as large a dichotomy as that is, and there's a place for both of them. And community banks are being bought up. I have sold two. They're being bought up because they're valuable to out-of-state banks to get into the Florida market. Florida's third biggest state in the union, third or fourth biggest state in the union, 20-something million people, very deposit rich. Therefore, out-of-state banks come in and bought up the smaller banks. There's not many of them left in this community. Do you start a new one today? In the old days, you sold your bank and started a new one. Today, with the regulation environment, it's not as easy and it's not as lucrative as it used to be. In the old days, you get that community bank charter, keep it for 10 years, and you'd have some very happy shareholders. But there's a place for the community bank and clearly the need for large banks. In the state of Florida, and somebody who's listening to this will verify it, two banks, I think, are 50% of all asks our deposits in the state. And I think it's Bank of America and Wells Fargo. Two banks are half. So that's of market share. So that's a pretty specific concentration. And that's where it's going. And what is really going away is the midsize. So you've got the very big and the very small. The middle is what has kind of disappeared. And historically, and I'll get off this, third biggest state in the union, no major banks based in the state of Florida. That's tragic.
Why do you think that is?
Interesting. Give you a history lesson. The legislature in the 60s said, we're not going to allow branching. We're going to protect everybody. So you can't branch. So you had a bunch of little small banks, or it had to be if you had what was called a holding company, and they'd go the next city and open another bank and open another bank. So it was to protect, theoretically, the bankers. Texas did this. You know who didn't do this? Alabama and North Carolina. So I'm going to ask you a question. Where are the big banks located now? Birmingham, the old AmSouth and South Trust and all these banks in Birmingham, Alabama. North Carolina, the old First Union, Nations Bank, et cetera, are based there. They did not have branch banking laws. And to think that the state of Florida or even at Georgia didn't have it. So where will the banking centers be? Atlanta, Miami, New Orleans, Dallas, Houston? They aren't because of that unique law. And so they flourished in some other states, which you wouldn't think 25 years ago, Alabama and North Carolina, to be banking centers.
Interesting. So you were talking about acquisition of smaller banks. You were a part of two. One of the most recent ones was last year, 2016, acquired by Republic Bank. You were in, obviously, the top leadership position at the time. Just for those that sort of watched this story sort of unfold in the press, what was that experience like?
The person that had founded the bank tragically died, Skip Carter, died of a heart attack. So the board brought me in to replace him, and then the Great Recession hit. I came in January of 2009, and the board wasn't completely aware of the issues they had. So we had to battle through that. And I'll tell you something that was unique about that. To survive, we had to shrink. To strategically shrink something is a unique business model. And the reason is banks have to have so much capital for a certain size bank. And it's good. You have to have building blocks. You can't grow dramatically like a dot-com or something like that in banking. And that's the right way to be. You have to have this capital base. Well, our capital was being eroded with problem loans. So either you had to go raise more capital or shrink. And we shrank. I shrank the bank over $100 million. That's hard to do, to watch your company shrink, to turn down business and a lot. So after we got it turned around, the shareholders were ready. So we found some real good partners. Several people were interested, and Republic Bank's a wonderful partner to buy us. Hard part about a merger, certain people lose their jobs. And that's the part that gets you. You have to have the economies of scale. In any merger like that, you try to create the economies of not duplicating back room and things like that. So that's the hard part of it. Secondly, don't know if you ever read the book, Who Moved My Cheese? But basically, you did it a certain way, they do it another way. There's a personality, probably like you, Ashley, that can handle that change. Certain folks are not good at handling that kind of change.
I'm in fetal pose right now. I don't like the idea of it. I don't know if I like change very much.
That's where it fell on my shoulders, being the CEO, handling change management. How to helping people cope with that. Preparing expectations. Classic management needed for that. And helping folks with change. But certain folks, you could tell early on, for those of you watching, they had their arms folded in meetings. It wasn't going to happen. They just weren't going to be able to do it.
And how many employees did you have going into that acquisition or merger?
We had about 60 and lost about a third of them. Yeah, probably a little more than that, probably 20-25%. And that hurt. You have to reach those economies to justify the price you get. But it's a very difficult situation, even different styles, different policies. And as I said, some people can handle that and some people cannot.
So you talk about making your businesses essentially derived from margins after the Great Recession, when the regulatory environment shifted and maybe even really tightened its grip around your business and interest rates plummeted. How did you navigate your organization through that?
The unique issues. I said, work on a 4% margin. So as rates change, we just keep moving. you had a prime that was so low that we couldn't basically get more than a 3% margin. So it was very difficult during that time, basically paying nothing for deposits, or a tenth of a percent on deposits. You had to have extreme expense control. And the biggest issue during the Great Recession was loan losses. You had your capital was wiped out in those situations. Something had occurred. If I appraised my collateral and the collateral was worthless, I had to write the loan down that much, and it came immediately out of collateral. It's kind of an accounting lesson there. And that wiped out small banks' collateral. In the current situation, and during the Great Recession, the margins got pressed. You had to control expenses and work at capital. A lot of banks had to go out and raise capital at 10 cents on the dollar. If they could get that, many went under. Many, many banks went under, several in our community. So it was tragic for a lot of the community banks that didn't have that margin where they could recover. Nobody wanted to go invest in a bank. Smart people did and scooped them up at very low prices. And a lot of smart people made fortunes during the Great Recession buying real estate, particularly bank properties, OREO, other real estate owned, is what OREO means, if you ever hear that term. And that's a bank we've taken back a piece of real estate, and bank foreclosures. And people were calling constantly, I want to buy your foreclosures. I want to buy your foreclosures. And there were fortunes made from that. And they're good business people for having done it. But in today's environment, it's still thin margins. It's still a relatively low prime. But with fee income and things like that, the banking industry is very profitable now. Earnings are up. Every bank in Tampa Bay has a 4 or 5 star rating. And so it's all going well for the industry.
What type of national crisis, and understanding the rippling effect and how it sort of dribbles down to the local level, when you think about sort of Trump now in office and a Republican-controlled Congress, are there any reverberations here locally when local leadership changes?
Absolutely. My industry, the current administration, had said they were going to roll back some regulation. After the Great Recession, there was an act called the Dodd-Frank Act, which put tremendous regulation on banks. I happened to go to Washington and lobby when it was being written and met with Bernanke, who was head of the Federal Reserve. And we're going, we don't need these regulations. You don't need to do this. And I'm in the Fed boardroom with the chair of the Federal Reserve. He went, took off his glasses. Ladies and gentlemen, you didn't expect us to do nothing after the Great Recession. The system almost burned down. So we had to do something. The result of that is the Dodd-Frank Act, which is a tremendous amount of regulation. Smaller banks literally are having trouble complying. The rules are so complicated. Somebody that isn't involved with it can't relate to that. I know I could tell you 3 banks on 4th Street that stopped doing residential lending, stopped offering the product. We couldn't fill out the forms. We couldn't comply. The amount of compliance involved with a residential department, I won't name the banks, but 3 banks on just 4th Street closed residential lending. Unintended consequences, but the regulation was dramatic. This administration has said they were going to roll some of that back. Bank stocks went up. There's regulations with regard to size. And I don't know, this is boring to everybody listening, but there's certain capital requirements. The too big to fail. You've probably heard that term. So banks over $50 billion. So a lot of banks don't want to get over $50 billion because of the unique analysis needed, capital requirements, et cetera. So banks are staying small. Unintended consequences. As we lobby, we're telling the legislators, I know that sounds good, but do you want the bigger companies in America have to go overseas to borrow money? Because the bigger banks are going to be overseas than in the United States. Unintended consequences, losing residential lending. I don't know if last time you applied for a residential loan. It's quite a process, quite a process. It's very laborious. When people come in and apply for a residential loan with me, particularly my friends, I go, just be prepared. It's going to be more paperwork than you can conceive of. And they go, oh, come on, David, it can't be that bad. And then a couple of weeks later, they're going, you told me, it's overwhelming. And some of it's needed. The system almost melted down. Quoting Bernanke. So with this administration, to answer your question again, those types of things, tax reform could be dramatic as to the profitability of companies. What are their growth needs? What's the capital needs? And banks provide capital. Banks provide capital to companies. So there's the industry stocks went up immediately upon his election.
Where do you stand in terms of sort of the legacy structure of a bank and the just maybe the pressure and the incoming nature of rapid technology and automation and artificial intelligence? How are you negotiating those two worlds together?
I'm embracing it. I'm in a little group with some folks. We meet every Friday morning, and very successful people. And I went around the room and explained to every one of them how automation, probably they will not be needed at some point. I had, and I don't want to offend anybody here. I said, let's start with banking. You can go online and get a home mortgage. You don't need to deal with a person. Eventually, a small business loan, you'll do it online. You're making your deposits. You can get cash without seeing anybody. My job could be gone. And I started going around the room. I said, I had an attorney sitting there. I said, my son will probably go online and look at contracts and get a contract, name it, a mortgage and things like that.
David, are you still popular with this group?
No, they were the most depressed guys after we started talking about it. But I started with me, and well, you might not need me. And then I went to a realtor. I have a residential and commercial realtor. I got two 30-year-olds, and they'll go into Zillow. And then if they could contact the person, and on the Zillow site or whatever real estate site, they can get the insurance, click on a button, get the insurance there, and then buy the house and various things and finance it. You could finance it on one site, get the insurance, finance it, and buy it. Why am I going to need a realtor down the road? And then I'll talk to the attorney, and then there was a financial advisor. And I'm probably offending everybody listening to this. But you asked about technology. You better be prepared for it. Financial advisors. I mean, there are some folks that are going, well, you know what? I'm just going to go online and do it myself. The 30-year-olds. And I'll tell you, my industry, my kids don't want to walk in a bank. They just don't. It's a nuisance to them. If they didn't have to walk into a bank, we have a guy at our headquarters in Louisville. The issue he was talking about was TV. We're looking at TV ads. He goes, I want to do some cable advertising. He goes, I don't have cable. I don't even have it. I said, if you didn't work in a bank, you wouldn't walk in a bank either. He goes, you're right. I wouldn't. So you better embrace it. And something I told my staff relative to this, I said, I better be careful. I don't want to be a Blockbuster Video. I don't want to be a Radio Shack. I don't want to be Circuit City, all out of business, because he didn't stay up. The technology changed. I'm glad I'm not competing with Amazon right now. There's a lot of people sitting in boardrooms on how are we going to handle Amazon. Some are embracing it. Some are just folding. And so you better be ready for it. You mentioned artificial intelligence, et cetera. My daughter works with AT&T, and she is in the Internet of Things division.
I didn't know that was a thing.
It is. She's in the Internet of Things division. I'll even get more specific. Internet of Things division, fleet division. And so the Internet of Things for your fleet of trucks or cars or alike, and they have a whole cadre of products for that. So if I'm answering your question right, you better embrace it or you're going to be Blockbuster Video or something like that.
For those that are up-and-comers, talk to them about things they have to keep in mind when building their local brand.
I tell folks, I believe in involvement, but I also believe, follow your passion. Don't just join something to join it. Maybe early on, because you don't know what you are passionate about. But there's so many boards, so many needs in the community. If you're passionate, I was chair of All Children's Hospital. I mean, you shove a little sick baby and you melt. I was passionate about it. Plus, my dad and both my brothers were physicians. I was passionate about the healthcare industry. Follow your heart. What are you passionate about? I mean, be it pets, be it cancer, be it growing the city of St. Petersburg, growing Tampa Bay, creating commerce, helping small businesses. There's some way to do it. Research that and get involved with it. I'm one of those that very family-oriented. If my kids were in it, I was going to be involved with it. I coached boys baseball. I coached Little League. I coached basketball, girls softball, girls volleyball, girls basketball. And I'm going to answer a question. I'd much rather coach girls than boys.
Tell me why.
Girls will listen to you.
Huh?
Girls will listen to you. Obviously, there's some other dynamics. Guys, let's sit down. Guys, sit down. Guys, and you got guys, just be quiet and sit down. Girls, sit over here. They'll sit in, and they're coachable. I enjoyed coaching girls because they're coachable. They'd listen to you and go do it. I enjoyed that. There's some other dynamics with girls, but terribly exciting. I enjoyed coaching both. So what am I passionate about? What my kids are involved with? Growing up, I was involved Little League. I was and my wife. Their classrooms, their schools, were involved with all their school activities. And their hobbies, we got involved. They were passionate about something, man, we'd go try it and do it together as a family. So as I progress in age, I don't really have a whole lot of hobbies because my family's been my hobby. Civic work has been my hobby.
In what areas of sort of the civic ecosystem right now?
Well, I have, as things have progressed, cut back on what I'm doing. Still involved with the chamber and promoting St. Petersburg. Our city has blossomed. Doesn't need as much help as it did when I first started doing it.
One of the things that we like to do is to highlight a small business or an entity or organization in the community that maybe doesn't have a lot of eyeballs on them. They don't necessarily need to be a nonprofit, but we've had a lot of guests speak to nonprofits that deserve some attention. It could be a little league group, the Women's Little League.
I didn't candidly know your mission here. I am just very enthused that somebody's doing what you guys are doing. It's why I got involved civically. The issue at the time when I got involved was trying to get baseball. But why did we want that? You had a circumstance where we had a very underperforming downtown. And the entire tax base of this community was basically houses. So property taxes. And we wanted a thriving downtown. When I was a young buck starting in the chamber and my little chamber committees and all that stuff. And I saw baseball as a means to promote our downtown and take the taxes off my house and put it on big buildings downtown. That was my motive. Baseball was somewhat the means to do it, but it could have been other things. At that time, cities like Tampa Bay were looking for sports franchises, the San Antonios, the Charlottes. Those cities were trying to get big league. Basketball and football, obviously, and other sports. Orlando, getting the Magic. That's how you became big league. Let's become big league. Let's go do that. With that, theoretically, you build it and they will come. And I'll answer that. They have come. We're last in the league in attendance, but that's not the issue. Go look at our downtown. Did it work? You're darn right it worked. We got as good a downtown as there is in the United States of America. It worked. What do you need for a progressive and good downtown? People got to live there. Cities that have wonderful big buildings but are dead at 5 o'clock isn't what we wanted. We have people living downtown, in our downtown. With that, that means the restaurants, the shopping, two Publix in downtown. I remember when Judy Ginshaft once spoke, this is about a decade or so, she says, USF St. Pete's made it. We have a Starbucks. We have a Starbucks. And that was cute. And so I'm telling you, we got two Publix. I think we've made it. I remember when we had the Final Four and there was another event, there was a traffic jam. And I was at a chamber meeting and they went, I got some good news and bad news. Bad news is we're going to have a traffic jam in downtown St. Pete. Good news is we're going to have a traffic jam in downtown St. Pete. Isn't that wonderful? There will be so many people here. And so the downtown has been transformed. And so this was civic involvement and the like. Baseball helped do that. And there's others that we could all sit in a room and a bunch of old timers to talk about it. The Vinoy was critical. Had to have the Vinoy. I'm not sure you get the Vinoy without the possibility of baseball. But the Vinoy was finally a new big structure happening. And then what occurred? There's something just called confidence. And you've got money. Where are you going to put it, Ashley? Where are you going to put that money? And when something's on a winning streak, you're going to start putting money there. Then you started having shops. Then you had some condos. Then you had Baywalk. And then you had some things like that. And one of the benefits that our town had, Baywalk was local. Those were local investors. Craig Sheeran and the similar companies. I'll give them credit for that. The city did an RFP, and I'm quoting Craig now. City did an RFP. How many people bid? One. But when you are doing something in your town, they knew their friends were going to look at it and talk to them. They were vested. The early developers on Beach Drive, all local people. All local people. Mike Cheesham had several and others. They were vested. Mike Cheesham puts art in front of it because he had art, you know, condos. You know what that costs? A lot of money. You're not making any money on that. He's from St. Petersburg, and he wanted it to be nice. And then other things like that, some of the restaurants and the like. It's not franchises. These are local. And so we had the benefit of local people doing it. And so then it flourished. And we now, the tax base has changed from millage on your house, and Rick and David Fisher could give you all the numbers. I don't know all the numbers, how the millage was flat or even down for a while. Unheard of. Lower taxes? Unheard of. But that was the model. That's what got me involved. That became my passion, improving our community. That's where what you guys are doing. I didn't actually know your whole mission, but this is wonderful. Wonderful.
Well, I have a secret to tell you. You mentioned Krikshire with Simbler. He's going to be one of our next guests. So you essentially did two shout outs in one. One for the St. Petersburg group and one for the Simbler company. David Feaster, thank you so much for being with us today.
I am flattered to be here. Thank you.
You made it to the end of another great episode. For show notes, head to stpete.co to the show notes page, which includes links to all the resources mentioned in the show, as well as quotes and key insights from the show and information about the guest and the host. Thanks again to our sponsor, Big C. Head to Big C, that's BIGSEA.co to check out their work. And if you like what you heard, make sure to share this episode on social media and leave a comment. See you next time.